Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil Advocates Radio Show. Dom, we welcome back a fine guest right from the top. He is the Democratic Party of Wisconsin chair, our good friend Ben Wickler. Ben, welcome back, man.
Hey, Ben.
Thank you so much, Crute. Thanks so much, Dom. We are 1 week from P-Day. P meaning primary. Things are getting intense. It's pretty exciting.
Well, I hope we can pee between now and a week from now. But Ben Wickler, absolutely. I'm at the edge of my seat. I can't wait. The most important election, spring election, let's be honest, not the most important election in my state's history, but the balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that's one of the big issues. Ben, so as a party, how are the Democrats gearing up for what comes next? Because we will pick our favored liberal, quote unquote, you know, compared to the conservatives, and it'll be game on between February 21st and April 4th, and that really is a pretty abbreviated general election, is it not, Ben?
It is 6 short weeks, and it's going to be intense. So we have 7 weeks until April 4th now, 1 week till the primary. This is 42 days of what will probably be the most expensive, most intensive judicial race for any elected judge at any level in American history. And we're going to have to pour everything we've got into it. You're right. You know, there are more elections, more important elections in our lifetime, but there's never been a more important spring election, because we saw in 2020, the state Supreme Court came within one vote of overturning the presidential election results. The state Supreme Court, by one vote, chose the most gerrymandered maps in the country for the Congress and for the state legislature. And we have this pre-Civil War abortion ban on the books. And all of that could come down to decisions that a 4-3 majority, either GOP-backed Republican majority or a actually paying attention to the law majority, decisions that that majority will make over these next few years. This is it. And if we win this thing, it opens up a new day for progress and possibilities and democracy in Wisconsin.
So Ben Wickler, is a fundraising apparatus, and those listening outside the state of Wisconsin may not understand, but the campaign laws are really set up to utilize the parties as sort of this uncapped Wild West. No offense to you guys, you didn't make the laws, but that's the way we have the laws. So Ben, is it your job, is it the party's job to sort of gather financial resources and have them ready to point in the right direction? And what direction is that? I'm not asking you to pick a candidate, but, you know, is it a media campaign? Is it a stadium tour? What's that look like, Ben?
It is. So Scott Walker, when he was governor, he decided to change our state's campaign finance laws. He said that if you're a union or another PAC, then there is a low cap on how much you're allowed to give to a state party. If you're an individual, wealthy individual, you can give an unlimited amount of money to a state party. And then the state party can give an unlimited amount of money to the candidates, which he worked out very well for him. The, you know, Diane Hendricks and the Dick and Liz Uline wrote $1 million checks to the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and the Republican Party of Wisconsin transferred millions of dollars to Scott Walker. Now, since then, we've decided, look, if those are the rules, then we are going to figure out how to use them more effectively than Republicans until we have the power to actually change the rules and have public financing and not have money so play such an important role in politics. And meanwhile, on the Republican side, since Citizens United, they've gotten more and more obsessed with dark money, undisclosed mega donations from their multi-billionaires. So, you know, Dick and Liz Uline and Diane Hendricks, they do write the million-dollar checks to the Republican Party, but they pour vastly more into these dark money vehicles that we saw do such despicable work in the Senate race. I think that that's what we're going to see in the Supreme Court race as well. At the Democratic Party, we are trying to raise funds, small dollars, big dollars, whatever kinds of you know, individual contributions we can get. They're all disclosed. There's no dark money at the party. But we will use those dollars to run the biggest field organizing effort we've ever done in a state Supreme Court election, knocking on doors, calling phones, texting people, doing relational organizing. We'll do coalitions work with Black, Latino, AAPI, Native American, Wisconsinites all over the state, rural organizing. We'll have yard signs up and barn signs all over the state of Wisconsin, voter protection work, and we will send money to the, once we have one progressive candidate in the race, either Everett Mitchell or Janet Protasiewicz, we will send money to that candidate in the general election so they can buy their TV ads and radio ads and digital ads, all of that. It's going to take all of that, because these elections can be so incredibly close. We remember 2019, the Republican candidate got a flood of dark money and won by 5,962 votes. And in 2011, the majority was on the line, and the Republican Prosser won by 7,006. So we do not want to go back to those days. I don't want this thing to be close. I want to blow this out of the water, but we have to be ready for this to come down to one vote per precinct. And frankly, if you're listening right now, you can probably get more than one voter to come out where you live. You can make the difference where you live, and it's going to take all of us doing that to pull this off.
Great point. Ben Wickler, chair of the Democratic Party of the great state of Wisconsin, joining us. Ben, great to see you. New York Times reporting and some follow-up reporting here locally at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the Democratic Party of Wisconsin putting mailers out, accentuating, let's call it, the fringe candidate Janelle Brangin, identifying her as a Trump Republican, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been kind of going back and forth on this. This was a strategy that the National Party and others have used in the midterms to a fair amount of success, Ben. Kurti and I have been a little critical about that philosophy. Instead of, you know, pointing out the Republican, why not, you know, use that money, that resource, to prop up a progressive candidate? I just want to get your thoughts on that and why that ended up going the way it did, Ben.
Absolutely. Now, the key thing to understand about the Senate, 8th Senate District, we already have our nominee, Jody Habersenikin, and we are doing everything we can to support her election. She does not face a primary. We've already endorsed. We are going to bat for Jody Habersenikin in the 8th Senate District. There is an election on February 21st in a Republican primary. And the thing about this primary, unlike a lot of the other primaries around the country that you're thinking about here, the Republicans in this are equally bad. The Janelle Brangin is a total flaming disaster, train wreck, ultra mega Trump Republican. And Dan Kunodal is a total flaming disaster, train wreck, ultra Trump Republican. They both wrote to Mike Pence and told him to ignore Wisconsin voters when the election was certified in 2020. So, you know, I make no apologies for making sure that Republican voters see a particular candidate. But either of these candidates, it's not like we're saying, let's put up somebody who'd be worse because it'd be better if she was the nominee. They're equally bad. Our focus is making sure that we win. And when we get to whatever comes out of the primary, we'll be making sure that that the voters in this district know just how extreme these candidates are. They are total abortion ban supporters. They are election overturners. And this is a district that's been represented by Alberta Darling, who, as Governor Evers wrote after she retired, she represented kind of class and poise and grace, a different kind of Republican who is not at all the kind that you see trying to, you know, overturn election results. So to me, this is about setting ourselves up for success. But it's not something where we're playing with fire with a candidate who's worse than the alternative. They are equally terrible.
Well, along that vein, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Ben Wickler, does the Democratic Party have a favored conservative in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race? I kind of like me some Dan Kelly as the worst of the right. Do you have thoughts?
I'm torn on this one. They're both so, so bad. I think the thing about Dan Kelly is people already know he's really bad because we saw in 2020. This is, I don't know if you remember, his profound ethical lapses, the way that he would rule in favor of people who'd been supporting him. And then Jennifer Doerr made a name for herself in the Waukesha Christmas Parade Massacre trial. But if you look at her past, she's really, really far to the right. And she's endorsed by these extreme anti-abortion organizations. They both went to this, you know, it's kind of training ground for radical right-wing judicial activists in law school. And neither of them have fallen very far from the tree. That's why Scott Walker appointed both of them. So, you know, we'll see what comes out of this. I think right now, if I was going to look at the two, it seems like Dan Kelly is able to raise more money and get more independent expenditures. And Jennifer Durow maybe starts with a warmer feeling in the electorate. But either way, we know that this is going to be about these basic questions of freedom. And we know that this is going to be an election that shapes the future, not only of access to safe and legal abortion care, but also democracy itself in our state for years to come. So this is all systems go, all hands on deck, you know, hit the warp drive on February 21st, as soon as the election results are called.
It's all going to be about turnout. And my concern with the Democratic Party, no offense to the current chair, is that Dems don't always turn out for spring elections, midterms. They turn out for presidentials. So, Ben, less than a minute. How do we get them to turn out, not just for the primary, but for the general?
Well, this is, you're exactly right. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who will always vote Democrat in November, but might or might not vote in April. And what we've got to do is knock on more doors, call more friends, talk about it on the radio, post on social media, assume nobody knows anything. Start with the basics and make sure every Democrat knows that everything is on the line on April 4th. If we do that, if we turn our folks out, we will win.
Most important spring election of our lifetime, Ben Wickler.
That's a pleasure to join you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Must have missed that smart-ass comment of mine. Thank you, Ben. Come back, more Devils.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. Join us, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, thanks to our most recent guest, a fine one, never enough time with Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman Ben Wickler. Don't forget, folks, a primary February 21st and a general election coming up rapidly thereafter, April 4th. Most important election of spring election of your lifetime. I'll put that one caveat. Most important spring election of your lifetime. Please tell everyone.
Just stay engaged. Keep doing what you're doing. Just go vote in the elections when they come up. If you don't know what's going on, you need a little advice, got to hear what's happening, just tune into the Devils. We'll get you up to speed and go engage and do your civic duty.
And just don't join a cult or a super PAC.
I don't want to join a cult.
Dominic, I have assertive, declarative statement to make. Ron DeSantis is not Scott Walker. I'm going to throw a question mark and make this statement instead. Ron DeSantis is Scott Walker, at least in terms of presidential candidate soon-to-be failures and parallels between these two less than fine candidates. Nate Cohn over at the New York Times. It's unusual when you see Scott Walker's name in ink anymore at the old gray lady. Here is what it says, the subheadline. His support, talking about DeSantis, among Republicans at this early stage of the primary cycle puts him in rare company. Soon to meet a buzzsaw, I suspect, Dom, is Meatball Ron DeSantis the next Scott Walker? It's a question I've been hearing a lot lately. And I will answer as an aside. Abso-frickin-lutely he is. Scott Walker is the college dropout Ron DeSantis with worse hair. Anyways, the premise is that there's an important similarity between the two. They both earned the affection of conservatives by owning the libs as governors rather than by giving soaring speeches or otherwise demonstrating the skills to win a presidential nomination. All they really did, all Scott Walker did, was use the powers of his office to stick it to people, right? That was his superpower, owning the libs. In the end, Wanker's success in Wisconsin did not translate on the national stage. The implication is that DeSantis' success in Florida might not translate either. A wave of articles over the last few weeks have questioned whether he has the charisma, charm, and likability to win the nomination. If he falters, the ending of his campaign might read a lot like the story of Wanker for president. But at least at the beginning of the race, Mr. DeSantis is no Scott Walker. I completely disagree, but I read on. He would start the campaign in a very different and far stronger position, even if there is still no way to know whether he has what it takes to succeed against former President Donald J. Trump. I also assert, as an aside, he does not. What sets DeSantis apart from Wanker? It's pretty straightforward. How many people already say they want him to be president? In this narrow but important respect, DeSantis has a lot more in common with Barack Obama, you take that word back, or Ronald Reagan than Walker or the other promising first-time candidates who did not live up to the high hopes in recent years, like Kamala Harris, Rick Perry, oops, or the retired general, Wesley Clark. Overall, DeSantis has 32% support in polls taken since the midterm elections. That is not a fleeting product of a wave of favorable media coverage. Instead, he has made steady gains in the polls over the last 2 years. Wanker, in contrast, had 7% in the early polls. I find this story to be completely erroneous because Scott Walker was the early darling of the Republican field, but not by the time he actually announced he was a candidate, Dom. Let's not forget, these electoral process, it's game on already. And back in 2015, right, Dom? We'd already been to Des Moines by now. We'd already seen Trump. You'd already shook his hand. Wanker was too big for the spin room, right?
Yes.
He thought he was such a big shot. Donald Trump's doing a spin room with, like, 12 local reporters in Politico, and Scott Walker's too big shot to come to the room. Because Scott Walker was the belle of the conservative ball. It wasn't until Donald Trump asserted himself. It wasn't until Scotty Wanker made it to the debate stage that he was truly exposed as just a weak, weak little man. He was terrible. Do you remember him on the debate stage? You can say, well, Scott Walker wasn't a big deal. Yeah, he was. Numerically, in the polling, very first Republican debate back in 2015, Cleveland, Dom, we went there later when Scott Walker was not the nominee and we crashed his party and he looked very sad and sober down the bar. Well, at that debate, it was Scott Walker and Jeb Bush flanking Donald Trump. Who else was on the stage? Well, you got Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, little Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Chris Christie, Rand Paul.
Was that the split up debate when they split them up? Was that the, or I'm confused.
I don't even see Carly Fiorina on the stage.
I mean, I was
going to
say Fiorina and Huckabee and Cruz and Carson. Yeah.
You know what is so funny in retrospect? I'm reading all these articles in real time about the tone of this debate. Here's one headline, Rich Lowry, National Review. Trump lost. Almost everyone else did well. That was his assessment. Major gains for Marco Rubio. You remember little Marco. The biggest shock of the night and arguably almost the most consequential development was Jeb Bush's failure to shine. Well, yeah, Jeb sucked. The undisputed winner, here's a different take, was Carly Fiorina. Here's one that's not surprising, Dom. Bush and Walker were the biggest losers. A lot of people thought Trump was the biggest loser that night. The traditional, you know, Republican press. I'm not talking about Fox News. I'm talking about, you know, the National Review. Here's another one. Larry Sabato over at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. You know, Sabato's crystal ball or whatever he calls it. only Trump bombed. That was the press's assessment of the performance of Donald Trump, because he was pugnacious. He was rude.
He was everything that the Republicans wanted and needed. They just didn't know it yet.
Scott Walker really, really was willing to sell all of us down the river for whatever political gain was necessary. Ron DeSantis, I believe, is willing to do the same. But the problem both those men face is Donald J. Trump. And not that I'm supportive of Trump in any way, if you've listened to the show before. Really? You know I'm not a big fan.
Thank you for the clarification, Crudy.
But Meatball Ron is going to go the way of Scotty Wanker. I mean, he's going to get crushed. He's going to run into a buzzsaw. Because they both lack charm. They got no it. Although Ron's got some marinara sauce.
The devil's advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the happy hour. Be careful out there. That ambulance is flying down the road. Dom, the phone lines, they're open. They're toll free for our fair audience. 844-967-2789. My assertion, which I can support with lots of evidence and strongly opinions. Stated opinions, Scott Walker is indeed Ron DeSantis, or more accurately, Ron DeSantis is the 2024 cycle Scott Walker. And they're both really bad at governance. I mean, Ron DeSantis stopped governing the state of Florida some time ago. Everything he does now is political circus. I saw today DeSantis signed an extended shipping migrants from other states to, you know, Martha's Vineyard bill. Extended the important funding for that bill at the cost of taxpayers in the state of Florida. But, you know, the Miami Herald, Dom, I know you were reading it before. They weren't very happy about Ron DeSantis. The hometown paper points out the gubernator there has kind of moved on. It's like he doesn't care so much for the people of Florida.
He's just really not that into you.
He's just really into making headlines and distracting from the failure to govern. But he'll start fights with Disney Corporation, right? And he'll make sure you never say gay. But back in 2015, when the Republicans first debated the presidential candidates, and it was Jeb Bush and Ben Carson and Donald Trump, of course, in the middle of the stage, but also Scotty Wanker flanked him to the right. And a lot of pundits didn't really realize what they were hearing that night. And do you remember what Trump did first? He refused to pledge to support any nominee other than himself.
He's consistent.
A third party run.
As he is doing currently.
And all the Republican pundits, oh, that's disastrous. He's dead on arrival. That's what they were saying. Here's what Democratic presidential strategist Bob Schrum said at the time. Trump not only survived, but thrived. Compare that to all the other headlines, you know, Biggest Loser, except those that pointed out Scott Walker sucked. That was quite obvious. That was a shared sentiment. But here's what Bob Schrum said. Trump not only survived, but thrived. The pundits who said he was a shooting star, sure to flare out, fast were wrong, including me. He may be practicing the art of the con job, but he's brilliant at it. He's flashy, but no flash in the pan. While he's interesting, everybody else is dull in a politically practiced way, except the obnoxious Chris Christie and the angry Ted Cruz, who's now kind of a backup Trump without the humor or the hair. Rubio seemed and sounded like a candidate for resident of Boys Nation, not the president of the United States. Bush was earnest and wonkishly workmanlike. Walker, I like to call him Wanker, a place filler, is a temporary Iowa front runner. At that time, first debate, Walker was perceived to be the Iowa front runner. And this article in the New York Times today saying, well, you know, there's a lot of difference between DeSantis and Walker. Look at the early polling. And I did. And I remember the cycle. Now, by the time Scott Walker jumped in the race, I mean, he'd already burned through $40 billion with the 527B shadow campaign.
Our American Revival, something like that.
But by the time he actually signed the Wisconsin budget, and I was there when he did so, and the next day he had convicted Russian spy Maria Butina at his campaign launch, where he greeted her, my understanding is, in the mother Russian he claimed to learn at Marquette, which he never graduated from. But that guy declared in July, and he was dead in the water by September, because he paled in comparison to Donald Trump. What the base wanted was a guy like Trump to tell them who to hate. Trump hated like they hate, the base of the Republican Party. And I'm not talking about all our conservative friends, but if you hate immigrants, if you hate brown people, if you're just kind of a little fascistic, then Scott Walker's a watered down version. You want a WWE sort of villain that was Donald Trump. And I got to tell you, Meatball Ron's not going to cut it. He's a 6-inch sub. You need the foot long. You need the full crazy that is Donald Trump. And I think that's what's going to happen in the elective cycle.
One big caveat that you assume Trump makes it to there. But I
think he'll make it to the stage in probably Milwaukee this summer when the first presidential Republican debate goes off, probably about August 15th.
The New York Times piece that we referenced mentions DeSantis, you know, getting like 30 points, right? But I'll go through. I looked at Real Clear Politics going back to like November, and DeSantis, he's got 30, 25, 35, 32, 28. As we get closer now, new year, 29. DeSantis, 42. DeSantis, 28. Now, 32. Here's what we see. On Wednesday, the 8th, he was at 32. A Reuters Ipsos poll from yesterday had DeSantis at 31. So that's
fine. Is that head-to-head with Trump?
No, those are his numbers, and that is exactly my point. What that does not tell you is that Trump's higher than him in almost every one of these polls. Going back, again, look at the same numbers. Trump plus 15, plus 23, plus 5, plus 12, plus 20, plus 26. Oh, here's one. The one where DeSantis got 42 was actually it wasn't a national, it was a New Hampshire Republican presidential primary. A state poll got 12 there. Again, Trump plus 10, most recent Trump plus 12.
And when you say Trump plus 12, that's whatever number DeSantis is at, Trump's got 12 more than that.
Correct. That's the spread between Trump at 43, DeSantis at 31. That's Trump plus 12.
So the initial durability of Ron DeSantis before he ever declares, before Donald Trump ever stands on the stage next to him. I mean, he's like Scott Walker polling well against these nuts in Iowa early in the running, right? Right? Wanker was like in the 30s in Iowa early on. He's a regional governor. They knew who he was. I mean, DeSantis, he's the flavor of the day, Dom. But ultimately, much like Scott Walker was a failure, not just as a governor, but also as a presidential candidate.
I mean, you know, dismal failure. Terrible. I mean, I don't know if you could do worse.
He has no it. Scott Walker has no it. And in some twisted way, I mean, DeSantis is an Ivy League educated, better haired, slightly rounder headed Scotty Wanker. And I pray for the sake of all Americans, this man never has the power of the presidency. I'll do my part. I hope you do as well, Dom. 844-967-2789. Let's get to PT. PT out there. How you doing, PT?
Hey, PT.
I'm good. It's beautiful and sunny out here. 45 degrees.
45, man. It's like 45 here. Everybody's got 45, PT.
But did you sit out in the hot tub today? Enjoying the sun. Anyway.
You wish you had that mental image of Crudy out in the hot tub. No, it's supposed to snow like 8 inches, man. So be happy, PT. Yeah, the crap weather's coming to Wisconsin, man. You escaped it.
I know. So all you have to do is ask DeSantis. You have to ask him what he's going to do about the border crisis between Canada and the United States. Remember,
Northern Wall.
Northern Wall, man. Build the wall.
That was Scott Walker's answer to Casey Hunt in August. And by August already, I mean, Walker declared in July. And he was at the Iowa State Fair in August. And our buddy Pizza Box Mike, he does Outside the Pizza Box right here Friday nights. Please listen about 7 o'clock Central. But he went down to antagonize Walker. Not just him, but he was prominent. And Walker gave this you know, speech on top of what? The hate bales. And people were holding up anti-Walker signs in the front row. And Walker, like in desperation, grabbed the sign and tried to yank it away from the protester. And Casey Hunt interviewed him that day, and he was clearly shaken. You know, the Marty Feldman eye was going nuts that day. And she asked him about building a wall. And, of course, as you recall, PT, he suggested we build two. One on the south and one on the northern side. He was unique, that guy. Uniquely bad. Yeah. As a candidate for the president.
Hey, so I have a question for you. If I want to send you some special Marion Barry treats from Oregon, where would I send them to? Would I send them to the Waukesha office? Or?
Dom's in charge of acceptance of all loose joints on behalf of the panel, PT.
Yeah, all right. I'll take care of that then. Anyways, you have...
Use your discretion, PT. I don't want to hear your scheme. Don't tell us your plan, PT.
Oh, no.
Just surprise us pleasantly one day.
Rhetorically speaking, of course. Dick from Madison, you are next. Welcome, Dick. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dick.
Oh, a little breaking news.
What's the breaking news? You going to break it for us?
Oh, yeah. Les Parmas is flipping, and he's you know, his old drinking partner, you know, Giuliani and him. He's basically saying the whole thing was a lie. He's on with, or he was on with Ari Melbourne. But anyway.
What was a lie? Which part was a lie? Because there's a lot of lies told by that administration.
Right. But he's admitting that all the stuff that he and Rudy were espousing, it was wrong. So isn't that something? That's breaking news on MSNBC.
Well, I sure do hope Rudy doesn't get disbarred or sued for defamation.
Right. You remember how Trump put the beat down on Walker, too?
Yep.
And when he went, fix your roads.
He said what? Like fix your, what
fix
he
your roads.
Fix your roads.
I mean, use the Scott holes against them? Remember the third debate, Dick, that Wanker's final debate, he was floundering by then. It was post, it must have been the Iowa debate. You know, he had made a mockery of himself, but he stood on the stage and he's like, America doesn't need another apprentice, sir. We've tried that. Like,
he
was in they claim that Wanker spent all night in the spin room telling any press member that would listen, America doesn't need another apprentice, trying to sell that line. Oh, was he desperate, Dick?
He was so desperate, Dick.
Yeah, he really was. But no, this thing with that Parmas, you know, it's hilarious. He was just on for about 5 minutes plus with Ari Melbourne, and it was like,
what are you doing cheating on us with MSNBC, dude?
Well, I put that on mute and watch it in the background, and it's, you know, something's out there, but there it is.
You better be reading the closed captioning. Appreciate the update. We'll look for that Lev Parnas breaking news, and don't forget Abe Froman, the sausage king of all Chicago.
Are you Abe Froman, the sausage king? I don't think so. Thanks for the call, Dick. Appreciate it. 844-967-2789. And I think we need to, I guess, in that vein, acknowledge that, you know, Donald Trump has lots and lots of headwinds right now. And in all these conversations, we all assume that nothing comes out of anything.
I'm not under that assumption. I'm just under the assumption he will not be convicted in a court of law. And in fact, his indictment may make him more appealing, because of course the entire Republican Party platform now is we are victims, poor rich white men. How will we make it in this society any longer?
When are rich white men going to catch a break in this world?
Kind of like that, right?
Well, regardless of whether or not he's indicted and or convicted, there will be action. Fani Willis, Fulton County DA, imminent decision on charging. And that was a while ago. We do have some,
she didn't know what the word imminent means.
Coming on over the next couple of days, James Santel going to join us tomorrow, I think at 4:30. Maggie Dawn going to come in for the Friday happy hour. I know as this stuff continues to break, we'll have more to share with everybody. But there's going to be some consequence, whether or not it is a conviction. As these things come out, as indictments drop, that's not going to bode well for the front runner in the GOP right now. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Come back. Last segment, 844-967-2789.
You're Ed Brown, the Sausage King of Chicago.
Yeah, probably.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. 844-967-2789.
Dominic, I think we've got some sound of the aforementioned Ron DeSantis. You know, he's been pushing all these, anti-woke legislative pieces. And
such an ass.
He's governing by fiat now, you know, in strongman fashion. But he was questioned today. And I would point out, Scott Walker and Ron DeSantis have this in common. They don't like to take public questions. They don't mind going to, like, friendly Foxy News, but they don't really want the scrutiny of publicity. And Ebone, I think you probably did the hard work, right? Yeah, he's nodding yes, so let's give him some credit. Ebone doing the hard work behind the scenes. Here's a little of the coverage from the Raw story, Dom. Governor Ron DeSantis on Tuesday appeared to be unaware that for over a week, multiple nationwide and local news outlets have been reporting on Duval County, that's in Florida, pulling a book about baseball great Roberto Clemente from its school shelves in response to the Florida Republican laws, which he claims are designed to protect parents and children, you know, from books, Dom. The far-right Republican Florida governor lashed out in response to a reporter asking about the Roberto Clemente book, first blaming politics, then teachers' unions, then claiming the story itself was a joke and manufactured, while never accepting the impact the legislation he has supported, promoted, and signed into law and used to brand himself as a protector of children, Dom, has had a devastating effect on those very children he claims to want to protect. I think we've got the sound. So Ebone, this is a couple minutes, but I think probably broken into a couple of parts. Here's Ron DeSantis defending his policies, Dom. They couldn't possibly cause harm.
I think we have the question first. We're going to play the journalist question, and then we'll get to the DeSantis. Let's do cut number one, please.
Are some areas where we've seen school districts just implement this law in different ways? Some school districts, as soon as the book is challenged, they'll pull it off the shelves. Other school districts will wait to go through the review process before taking it off. Some of these reviews are taking months. The Department of Education just complained to Duval County Sunday about a book about Roberto Clemente being kept off the shelves for months as they reviewed it. They just...
Okay, and here's DeSantis now about Roberto Clemente. Cut two.
That's politics, though. To be honest with you, come on. I mean, we know. Roberto Clemente? I mean, seriously. That's politics. I think the school unions are involved with this. I mean, you guys can FOIA some of these communications. I guarantee you, you'll
freedom
find
of
some
information
of that with the people that are doing it.
Why would they need to do
so
that?
That's a joke, okay? You get something like that about a baseball player, First of all, I don't think parents are challenging that. I think they're doing it unilaterally to try to create an issue. But that can be resolved in about 2 minutes to be able to do that. And our Department of Education will be working, very quickly if they need any type of advice on that. But none of these things, 99% of this stuff is manufactured. It's not what you need to be spending time on.
Someday maybe we'll show you the basics. He says, right? Let's keep playing it if we could, Ebone. At some point, maybe we'll show you what I mean. Maybe, but not today, probably.
We may do an event where we actually show all this stuff and put it on the big board so people can see it.
Yes, that would be helpful.
One person that will stand up and say some of this stuff should be in. But that's so much different. You know, having young kids in engaging in sex acts, you're going to compare that to a biography.
Show me that
of
book.
Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, I want to see that book. You know what I mean? Where is the banned child sex act book?
Where? In the Blue Lagoon? I don't know what he's talking about, man. But what is so? Apparently, he has a very efficient system for the book banning. Well, that's great. That's great to know.
Well, if you
great
make a parental complaint, apparently they must pull the book off the shelf and go through a review process. There's something like 1.5 million books that had to be reviewed in one library. Very efficient, you know, because some kid might find something in there. What, Karen mom might get offended because they're learning some history of what? The fact that Roberto Clemente is a black Puerto Rican baseball player may have faced some discrimination in America.
No. Is that even possible? We're post-racial, man. We had a black president.
Well, you know, it's olden times, Dom, like the 1970s.
Right.
But we can't talk about it because that might be implying that white people bear some responsibility of the racism.
No, that's critical race theory, man. We're going to have none of that in Florida.
Can't imagine why they've pulled a book on Roberto Clemente off Florida.
Well, apparently the governor who initiated this entire thing says it's a joke. So don't worry about it. It's all good.
You know, yesterday we talked about the newest nickname for Ron DeSantis. While I like to parallel his soon-to-be failed presidential campaign with Wanker, they're both gubernators of their respective states. Meatball Ron, I kind of like that one. And Stephen Colbert, one of my favorite, does the late-night political humor. And here's what he had to say about DeSantis's new moniker. As the Raw story noted earlier yesterday, Donald Trump loves to denigrate and define his opponents with mocking nicknames, and he's reportedly got a new one for his strongest would-be rival. The New York Times reports Donald Trump is calling his potential 2024 rival Meatball Ron in private. Let's be honest, the Daily Beast Matt Lewis argued, Trump is an equal opportunity offender. His goal is to come up with some ways, any ways to define, diminish, and humiliate his opponents. He works diligently at his efforts, testing and revising his slurs. And while de-sanctimonious was a good first effort, it also had too many syllables.
Now that's true.
Likewise, Shutdown Ron, the other name he's reportedly toying with, doesn't have the same ring as Meatball Ron. Stephen Colbert, here's where we get to my favorite late night show. Colbert said effectively, oh, I do not like how much I love that. CBS Stephen Colbert reacted to the new moniker during his Tuesday night monologue, which also chided Nikki Haley's presidential campaign announcement. She doesn't put up with bullies, Colbert said, mocking Haley.
Yeah, right.
She only calls them on the phone to ask them if she can run for president.
Please?
Because nothing says strength like picking your bully's brain before you can do anything. But it was the revelation of Trump's new nickname for Ron DeSantis that made Colbert giddy. It's so dumb and accurate. And then he put up two pictures, one of Ron DeSantis and one of a meatball. And the resemblance, Dom, I got to tell you, it was striking.
I don't like it. I love meatballs, man. You're going to make me not like meatballs.
Dom starting the meatball super PAC. pro meatballs. I'm raising money for meatballs. Thank you, Ben Wickler, our fine guest. Don't forget the Empowered Caregivers going off at 7 o'clock and Native Roots Radio in the meantime. Keep it locked right here at Civic Media. You're listening right now.
Meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
Oh, I have so many names.